Hello, and welcome into the light. I'm Catherine Michelle. This program will consist of an hour with Tower, the distinguished American composer Joan Tower, that is. I had the opportunity to speak to her last month when she was in Austin to receive the Eddie Medora King Award for Excellence in Music Composition from the University of Texas at Austin, and to serve as visiting composer. We'll hear part of an interview we had, I'm going to save some of it for future programs, and listen to some of her orchestral, solo, and chamber music. Joan Tower is hailed as one of the most successful woman composers of all time, and she's going to tell us how that success came about. Her music will tell you why it came about. She was the first woman ever to receive the coveted Grammar Award in composition in 1990. She is the recipient of the Alfred I. DuPont Award for Distinguished American Composers. She was inducted in 1998 into the prestigious American Academy of Arts and Letters and into the Academy of Arts and Sciences at Harvard University in the fall of 2004. In January 2004, Carnegie Hall featured a retrospective of her work, showcasing numerous artists who regularly perform her music. Founder of the Da Capo Players in New York City, Tower is an accomplished pianist. Her music has been commissioned by top orchestras and soloists. She is conducting more and more, and since 1972, she has been Asher Edelman Professor of Music at Bard College. She is also composer in residence with the Orchestra of St. Luke's. The first piece we'll listen to is entitled Sequoia. In her first piece for orchestra, Tower took the opportunity to explore on a large scale issues that fascinated her in the music of Beethoven, matters of balance and contrast. She chose a potent image for extra musical inspiration, the immense sequoia tree. She says, "The achievement of such great heights by the giant, majestic sequoia seems to me an incredible feat of balance. Yet, in spite of its power and grandeur, its leaves are tiny, no longer than a thumbnail. In fact, the overall shape and contours of the tree are really very simple." Tower likens the architecture of her piece to the structure of a tree. Like a tree trunk, the harmonies and registers grow and spread from one source, the main pedal point, G, that opens the piece. This balancing, like the branching of a tree, continues to develop into more complex settings as the branches start to grow sub-branches. The balancing principle permeates every facet of Sequoia, most importantly in the areas of rhythm, tempo, dynamics, pacing, texture, and instrumental color. I asked Joan Tower to tell me something about the piece, so let's listen to what she said about it. Hello, Joan Tower. Thank you for coming into the light.
Thank you for inviting me.
We are about to play some music of yours, and I've told our listeners a little bit about the piece, but I wonder if you have any stories you'd like to tell. And I'm thinking about Sequoia. It's a wonderful piece, which I adore. Is there anything that you can tell us about how you started to think about it?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and a good one, because Sequoia actually changed my life.
Really?
Yeah. It was my first orchestra piece, and it was commissioned by the American Composers Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And Francis Thorne, who is this, he used to be the executive director of the orchestra and is the prime mover behind that extraordinary orchestra, which is a orchestra that does all new music. Only. And I think it's only one of two orchestras in the country that devotes itself to new music. They play at Carnegie Hall. It's a fantastic organization. Anyways, he came along and he said, "Joan, it's time for you to write an orchestra piece." And I was like, "No." I was like already in my late 30s. Nowadays, you know, you come into a competition with three orchestra pieces at the age of 18 or whatever.
is it because you weren't interested in doing it, or you were intimidated by the
idea? No, I was intimidated. Mm-hmm. I was totally intimidated because I had been around chamber music all my life, and the idea of an orchestra just scared me. So he persisted, and he said, "This is now time for you to do this piece." So I said, "Okay." So I started to write this piece, and it was just sheer torture. Well, like most of my pieces are sheer torture, but this one was even particularly torturous because it was for orchestra. And so then the rehearsals were in New York, and they were held at the studio. I forgot the name of the studio, Carroll Studio on 42nd Street. And it was like this low-level room. And they had to rehearse there because that was where all the percussion was. And I had 64 percussion instruments in this piece.
64?
Yes, five percussionists, very active. I love percussion. So it was in this low-ceiling room, and they were all jammed together. And I found myself sitting next to the cowbell. And all I could hear was cowbells. That's all I could hear.
Were you at, this was the first rehearsal?
Their first rehearsal, and I was a wreck. You know, because it's sort of like you're an architect with a blueprint, which is an architectural blueprint. It's very, very finite. And your building is going up in 15 minutes. And there you're looking at this thing that you spent a year on, and the windows are too big, and the colors are all wrong. You know, it's very anxiety-provoking, especially with an orchestra. So I'm sitting there hearing the cowbell. That's all I can hear. And Dennis Russell Davies was conducting, and he would turn to me and ask me questions. And I was like practically trembling that I couldn't answer the questions and I couldn't hear. And he said, Joan, you're sitting in the wrong place. Come over here. Sit over here next to the flutes. So at that point, all I could hear was piccolos. But actually, that turned out to be a blessing in disguise because I was like... I had a good excuse. I couldn't hear anything. See?
Yeah.
So I could answer questions like, is this an A flat or is this an A natural or whatever? You want a slur here, that kind of thing. But I had an excuse that I couldn't hear the old orchestra, so it was less intimidating as time wore on. Then they moved into Alice Tully Hall, this beautiful hall at Lincoln Center with great acoustics. Yeah. And all of a sudden, this piece, which they had rehearsed now for three times, I think it was, which they could now play, came alive in full regalia.
That must have been a thrill.
And I was sitting there just about, I mean, it was just like you had a skyscraper that you had just created. There was the skyscraper. You had created it. Like, you're looking at this monumental thing that you designed and created. I mean, that's the feeling,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I was just overwhelmed. And I kept following Dennis Davies around like a puppy dog because I was so needy and my anxiety level was so high. And he kept sort of like trying to get away from me. Like, Joan, get lost. You know, get lost. I said, well, is there anything you want to ask me or tell me or anything? No. We're just doing fine. In fact, we're going to change the program around so that your piece is featured.
Ooh.
I was like, really? Wow, fantastic. So that gave me the one clue that he thought the piece had potential. Because I thought it was a total disaster, of course. Because
where
of my anxiety.
Where does the featured piece go?
It goes right before intermission.
Right before intermission, yeah.
But they invited Keith Jarrett to play a concerto by Alan Hovhaness, and they put him right before me. Mm. And the place was sold out, not because of anybody except Keith Jarrett.
Right.
And he was right before my piece. I thought, I'm dead. I'm dead in the water in here. And I was sitting in a box, and I was just convinced that the whole thing was going to be a disaster. So intermission comes, and there's this line of people waiting to congratulate me on my piece. And I said to myself, these are all my friends. They just want to, you know, give me some encouragement, sympathize with me, hold my hand while I'm, you know. But actually, they actually liked the piece. But, of course, I didn't see that because, again, you know, I was just totally into this world of this is a disaster.
Well, it's a piece to like.
Then what happened was Dennis decided to program in San Francisco. Then Zubin Mehta got a hold of it and decided to program it with New York, which is another whole story. And then he reprogrammed it at the United Nations. On United Nations Day, which was televised. Then Leonard came in and heard the piece, slacked him, and he said, I am going to play this piece in X, X, Y, and Z, like four different orchestras around the country, and I want to put a hold on the recording. I want to record this piece with St. Louis, and furthermore, I want you to be composer in residence with St. Louis.
Whoa.
I was just nonplussed. This piece literally changed my life.
That is wonderful.
That's the story of Sequoia. So you, that was a great question.